Minog gishigad nindawe maganag. I greet you in Ojibwe, which is the largest language group in North America, Canada and the U.S. together. It's the language where I grew up, and it's the most commonly spoken language spoken in the job that I do today as the National Indigenous Bishop of Canada. What I said was, good day, and then I said, you are all my relatives. Our elders say that that's important to establish. So you don't go around saying, you know, it's nice to meet the rector, and you don't greet a bunch of folks. You establish the most important thing in their mind, which is that we're all related to each other. And I think that's probably pretty good. I should say, however, that Ojibwe has a dubitative mode, which means that I'm not quite sure that you are my relatives. And the way that, to put a positive spin on it, folks, it's saying, you are my relatives. I think we should act like relatives. I'm praying that we'll be relatives. Let's be relatives, okay? That's the best way to act, and I think that that's about right. I have been very happy to be here for any number of reasons. It's nice to be back with Dan, and everyone has treated me in a spectacular way. I should also note that most of the places I visit, 225 communities across Canada, from coast to coast to coast, that most of them are under snow right now. So it's very nice to be here. But I was preparing to come here, and as I looked at a map of this area, I thought of a story that happened a few years ago. I brought a Navajo elder to St. Paul, Minnesota, and we went to a bluff where you can overlook an area. You can see the area where the Minnesota River and the Mississippi River join. These two great rivers come together. And the area is filled with roads and freeways, a lot of industrial development, the remains of a big meatpacking industry is there. It's really kind of ugly. There's a few trees here and there, but it really is, the way I looked at it back then, a place of pretty much devastation in an area that should be quite beautiful. And so I wanted to get the straight indigenous understanding of what was going on here. So I said, well, what do you think? And he looked out there and he said in Navajo, Najonie, which means it's really beautiful. So I was put in my place anyway. So I said, I wanted to know why. And he said, it's a very beautiful place. He said, look at all of these people who are driving back and forth and making a living here. This is a place where a lot of people have found a way to take care of their families. And he said, whenever two rivers come together, we believe that one of them is female, one of them is male. And whenever two rivers come together, it's a sacred place. It's a place where life is formed and imagination happens. It's a wonderful, wonderful place. That's why there's so many people living here, because it's a sacred place. It gives life. It takes care of people. It's a beautiful place. And then this was the killer. He said, and I understand that there's a very big mall here. And that it's the biggest mall in the world, they tell me. And people from all over the world come to visit this mall. See, this is a very sacred place. Well, anyway, I was thinking of St. Louis and that story when I prepared to come and this area. Because this, of course, you've got so many rivers coming together here. You know, you're doubly sacred here. So I I was thinking a lot about that, and that this too is a worldwide place of hope, of innovation, of creation, of people taking care of one another. And it proves my Navajo elders' point that rivers are sacred places that people gather to do great things. Now, I want to say a little bit more about that, because I think that what the indigenous folks would say about this has some relevance to our day and our readings today, the gospel. The Ojibwe word for the mouth of a river is Sageen. You would spell it S-A-G-E-E-N, Sageen. And you can find a number of communities that use a variant of that word. There's a suburb of Toronto called Mississauga, and it means in Ojibwe the place where there is the big mouth of a river. However, Sageen has another meaning. It is the word for love. So Sageen means river, or the mouth of a river, the beginning of a river, and also the mouth of a river, and it also means love. This is a very important teaching and a very important understanding, and I think it is at the heart of our gospel as well. Sageen is used in a number of the important Ojibwe Bible passages. For instance, for God so Sageen the world that he gave his only begotten son. And so this word is a very special and sacred word. Now, we see in the teaching of Jesus, I think, an expansion of that, where he talks about the two great loves. When asked what is the greatest commandment, he says to love God and to love your neighbor. These two form what you might call two sacred rivers that give us life. Jesus later in the gospel passage relates his leadership and the foundation of his ministry and his work in the world on these two great commandments. They are the font of compassion, of morality, of the way of life that Jesus asks of each and every one of us. Now, there are other ways of life, of course. You can organize your life upon a strict following of moral precepts. That seems to be what Leviticus 19 is telling us. But the psalm says that there's more to it, that the following of the way of life that God asks for is a life of fruitfulness, a life of joy. It's like a tree by a river of water. It's a life of expansive goodness going out to other people. This is in sharp contrast to the way of life that so many of our fellow Americans, and by the way, I'm a citizen of both Canada and the U.S., so just wanted to make sure that you understood that. So many of our fellow Americans and fellow Canadians, I have to confess, are so absorbed with getting more and more and more that they haven't noticed how constricting that is to life. What Jesus is asking for is not a renunciation of life and its joys, but an understanding of where its joys come from. That the river of love, beginning first with love of God, orders our life in such a way that we have a font of love towards others as well. That these loves bring to us the goodness and the joy and the happiness that is is to be the hallmark of a Christian faith and Christian life. Now, as I was thinking about these things and talking to you, it reminded me of something that happened a number of years ago with my son. My son is now 14 and has always been one of the greatest joys of my life. But when he was 2 years old, and I should say it was the middle of winter and we were living in Fairbanks, Alaska, somebody said, "Would you like to come to San Diego?" And we said, "Why, yes." And so we did, and they paid for our family to come down, and we went to the San Diego Zoo. And we were wearing shorts in January, something that hardly ever happens in Fairbanks, I should say. Anyway, so we went to the zoo, and Blake was just about 2 years old, and he was at that time when two-year-olds narrate everything. You might remember. And he was pointing out everything. He hadn't quite got the names down, so it was Croco the Dial and Hippo the Potamus. And he was pointing them all out and talking about them, and he was jabbering away. He's a teenager now. He doesn't quite jabber as much. He just grunts now. But we remember when he jabbered. And we were going around, and he was looking at everything, and we had gone a long time, and we ended up, it was towards the end of the day, and it was even starting to get a little bit darker, and we ended up at the at a tank, a big glass window, and behind it was a mother hippopotamus and her baby, and they were swimming in water. It was really great. And I looked at him, and he had this look in his eyes that I normally associated with a nap is coming on, you know? And parents will, I think all of us who have been parents will remember that there was a certain time of day that if your kid at 2 years old took a nap at that time of the day, you were going to be up with them till 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. So this, of course, becomes urgent, right? And I say to my wife, "Look at him," and she goes, "Oh no." And she thinks also that this look is a nap coming on, right? He's just staring at the tank. So she said, "Well, you better put him down on the ground." I was carrying him on my shoulders, and she started walking ahead, and he was still so hardwired to mom. Actually, he still is hardwired to mom. But anyway, she walked away, and I put him down, thinking that he would, you know, toddle after her. But instead, he zipped around me and ran up to the tank. There was a little concrete at the bottom holding the glass, and he stepped up on the concrete and looked at it, and then he started tracing the action of the hippopotamus as the hippopotamus would move in the tank. And then he started speaking to himself, and you couldn't understand it. My son is not a Pentecostal, but he sounded like he was speaking in tongues. And he was tracing this back and forth and kind of muttering to himself. And I watched it. It was a beautiful thing. And I was feeling so good. I grew up in a very difficult family. And it was one of those moments when you realize that your life, it may have had a lot of pain, but you've had a lot of grace and a lot of goodness. And God has given you a family like the one you tried to avoid when you were younger. Unlike the one you tried to avoid when you were younger. And so I was sitting there and watching this, and suddenly I became aware that a crowd had formed. And they had not formed to watch the hippopotamus, but they had formed to watch my son. And they were nudging themselves and pointing at him and calling people over and saying, "Look at that." Because you could see in his face this look of fascination and delight. And what was interesting to me about that moment is that what they saw in his eyes was even more spectacular than what they saw in the tank. It recaptured for them something that they had lost, something they had forgotten about, something that they had hoped for but was no longer there. And for just a moment, they were in his mind and in his heart and seeing something so wonderful. Now, it's a great story, isn't it? Tell me it's a great story. You like my son, don't you? Right. Yeah, that's good. But I'm not telling it just for that reason. I'm telling it because to me, that also has embodied for me what I understand our task is as a church. Our task, but our hope, our challenge, our joy, our wonder, is to be able to tell people what we see in Jesus, to tell people what we see in the promises of God, to tell people what we hope for, what we dream of, what we believe God has as a destiny. Now, it's pretty rough. I've been following the politics here for a while, and it's pretty rough to hold out a whole lot of hope in the midst of so much noise. But that's what we've been given as a task, to say it's going to be all right. Things can get really messy, but God is going to do something great. Be ready for it. See it. To have in our hearts, in our faces, to live in such a way, to give in such a way, to act in such a way, to be in such a way that people can see this world and understand that there are great things if we can believe, if we can live in that belief, if we can love in that belief. So, thank you very much for your attention this morning. I hope, first of all, that you understand that you live in a wonderful place that has captured the imagination of millions around the world. It's an enchanted place. I imagine there are days when it doesn't seem that way. But also that we are in this church in an enchanted place too. Because in this place, two rivers that can give life and give hope come together, the love of God and the love of a human being, love of our fellow human beings. This is such a great and wonderful calling. It is our privilege now to live it. Amen.